Welcome to episode 185 of Sports Geek. On this week's episode, I chat Swedish basketball with Johannes Wallert, and you'll learn how to wear a different jersey to every game without breaking the bank.
Welcome to Sports Geek, the podcast built for sports digital and sports business professionals. And now, here's your host, who's looking forward to Melbourne International Comedy Festival, Sean Callanan.
Thanks, DJ Joel. My name is Sean Callanan, and you are listening to Sports Geek, and I am looking forward to making my Melbourne International Comedy Festival debut. I will be doing two shows as part of the School of Hard Knock Knocks. Shows that they're going to be performing. They've got 12 shows, I think, over the festival. I will be on Thursday, April 12, and Sunday, April 15. I'm currently refining my material. There is a lot of sports geekness in my material. Stick with what you know. So there is a few jokes around what happens in sport and what happens around geek culture and the internet and such. So if you're in Melbourne or you're going to be around for the comedy festival, I'd love to see you in the audience. Simply go to seancallanan.com/comedy if you want to see me do 10 minutes of stand-up. Hopefully the video will be recorded, and for my international listeners, you'll be able to watch it after the event. But if you would, I'd love to see a few familiar faces in the crowd. Really looking forward to this episode. It's a double episode. You're getting two guests for the price of one for this episode. Really happy to be able to catch up with Johannes Wallert from Swedish Basketball Federation. Caught up with Johannes when I was in Paris in late December. Luckily, he was in Paris at the same time to talk about what he's doing in that space. We've been connected for a while. He's been a listener of the podcast and he's in the Sports Biz Slack. And so it's really good to catch up with his story and what he's been able to do in Swedish basketball, and also what he's been able to do with the amount of resources that he has got. So for those of you who don't have the big teams and have and aspire to producing some of the content and activations and tactics that the bigger teams around the world do, I really hope you like this conversation with Johannes as much as I do, because I think there's a lot of really good takeaways for people at all levels. And then also stay tuned for a merchandise game changer when I talk with Brian Watkins after my conversation. Brian Watkins from repthesquad.com. But now, here is my chat with Johannes Wallert from Swedish Basketball. Very happy to have a good friend who I was lucky enough to catch up with on my recent European adventure in Paris, Johannes Wallert, marketing manager from the Swedish Basketball Federation. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So it was really good. As I said, it was quite fortuitous that you were in Paris the same time I was in Paris, and we'd met on this wonderful thing called the internet and via the podcast, and so we'd known each other via the Slack. So it was good to catch up. And it was what I found really interesting around my European trip was to see how the different markets in Europe and how the different sports are very different to, you know, the Australian market where I am and the US market that I'm very familiar with. To get people started to understand where you work, take us through what the Swedish sports market looks like and where basketball sits in that.
Yeah, well, I'm sitting here in Sweden now, and we have minus 10 degrees Celsius, and it's a snowstorm. So obviously, winter sports is a big part of the Swedish sports market. We just came off the Winter Olympics, where we had great results.
Yep.
So I'd say skiing, ice hockey, downhill skiing, they make up a big part of the Swedish sport market, participants and also commercially. During summer, football, European football is number one by far.
Yep.
Participants and in the stands. And after those big two, really, there's a gap, winter sports and football.
Yeah.
But then there's the other team sports, where basketball would be number three or four maybe in Sweden.
And so you work, and so you work with the federation, which has the charter of being participation, and also the national team. So what is in your in your role as marketing manager for Swedish basketball? You're also doing the grassroots piece as well as the national teams.
Yeah, well, the main concern for the federation is driving participation right yep. now and grassroots. So obviously, a lot of what we do is centered about giving support to the clubs out in the country, and when it comes to the national teams, well, we want to compete on the highest level, and what I'm doing there is trying to fill the stadiums, build a fan base, and make people appreciate and want to watch the national teams.
So in the space, in, you know, if we're looking at where it sits, you're very much you're a challenger brand. You're punching up to the sports that have taken the attention. From a resources point of view, I'm assuming you don't have a cast of many to support you. What does your team look like?
Yes, I mean, I've been listening to your podcast for a few years now, and it's amazing what some people and some teams do, and you get really inspired. Then you go back and see what you really can do.
Yep,
we're two people in the marketing communications department. It's myself and a newly hired great digital content manager, Isaac Eriksson, and we market the game. We sell the tickets. We are doing the sponsorships for the federation. We do the communications, handle the website, and we do most things in marketing, event, and communications. So, yeah.
It's a lean team, but you're not looking at a glass half full. You've increased your team by 200%. I think, you know, a lot of people would be shaking their heads and wish they could have that kind of increase in resources.
That's true. it's always greener on the other side of the grass, but it's so much help to get him. Yeah.
So and I do appreciate it, because I do remember you emailing me and saying, hey, I'm listening to this. I'm getting ideas. And, you know, one of the phrases I use is steal with pride. And so you were stealing these ideas and trying to apply them like one at a time. And I think, you know, it's a really good example of, yes, I could be talking to, you know, Chris Harris at Arsenal, or, you know, TJ Ansley at the Blazers now at Columbus, and those kind of things, and they have got more resources. But what I really loved about catching up with you and hearing what you've been doing is just taking the one or two things that you can do and apply it, because you can't do everything when you're in that role. You've really got to pick and choose your battles and go from there.
Yeah, exactly. I think. I'm going to confess, I stopped listening to your podcast for a few because there was too many ideas and it's frustrating. I had to concentrate on really what we really wanted to do.
Yep.
And, you know, once you get all these popcorn, you know, ideas coming up as popcorn, and you start losing focus on what's really important, you can't be the New York Knicks or do what the Golden State Warriors does, VR, whatever, if you don't have like an email list of your yep. ticket customers. So I guess there was one podcast I was listening to, Charlie Shin from the MLS,
yep.
Where he expressed that they can't do everything, you know, what the NBA does.
Yep.
And that's really when I felt like, okay, you really need to step back. Where are we right now? What is the next step for us? We can't, you know, even if it's super cool, we're not there.
So thank you for that. I will put a warning now on future podcasts that it could distract you with a lot of good ideas. I think that's the pack. I should put that on the packaging. But, you know, you did talk about, and Charlie talked about it, and that was episode 100, you know, people haven't listened to it, because he was talking about the journey of the MLS and getting their data right and building up their data. So did you effectively sort of take some of the tenets of that conversation to say, okay, what can we do to build out an email list? How can we start building out something that would become people we would communicate to about ticketing for an event or participation? Did you sort of say that's where we want to target things and start building it from there?
Yeah, I mean, we need 3 or 4 years ago, I didn't know anything about this. I was running a club in the highest league in Sweden, basketball league in Sweden, yep. SGM, and I came from the basketball side, the sports side of things, and the general perception was if we win, people will come.
Yep.
And I think intellectually, if you have a league, you know, half of the games are lost.
Yep.
So I started to think, I mean, this is not possible. We can't work like this. It can't be like this. And that's how I started to check for information. What do other people do? I stumble upon your podcast. And after a while, I had a good friend who was head of marketing at the club back then, who had lots of literature from the States. And finally, we said, well, we're going to start with the ticket buyers. We have a system. In some clubs, they still pay cash. So they don't know anything about the people coming to the games, really. But at least we had email tickets to the ticket buyers, email addresses. So we said, let's start just, you know, by doing a newsletter. We had like 200. But just to start there and build from there.
And one of the things you recommended, and I hadn't heard of it, was a book that you said you read, and it really was a bit of a game plan for you and on ticketing and how to market sports. Do you want to tell everybody what that book was and where you got some inspiration from that?
Well, it was my friend Fredrik Jonsén, who actually played college basketball at Oklahoma State.
Okay.
And I guess that's how he kind of got a hold of it. It's John Spolstra's Sell Ice to Eskimos.
Yep.
I guess his son is more famous now, being coach of the Miami Heat. But you couldn't really buy it. We couldn't even buy it. He had an old copy. I don't know where he got it from. I've tried to get it on Amazon, but, I mean, can't get a hold of it.
I think he's redone it. It's now marketing, you reckon I could say it if I do it, Marketing Outrageous Redux, how to increase your revenue by staggering amounts. So it's a reboot of that original book. But, you know, he was pretty much bringing some of the stuff that the NBA does, as well as, you know, the minor league, all the different tricks of the kit bag of, you know, how to fill a stadium, or, you know, the cheeks and the seats, as I talk about. And so you just started again applying some of those tactics in what you were doing at your club, and then sort of started bringing those sort of same tactics to Swedish Basketball Federation?
Yeah, I mean, it was just lots of ideas that, you know, market the away team, do all these themes, try to focus on three games instead of the big games, instead of focus on, you know, trying to get people to the games where you don't think people are going to come.
Yep.
Kind of, it was just inspirational, and we weren't really at that point into the CRM or digital marketing or anything. It was just more of storytelling and tricks to get people to come to the games.
But a bit of, like I said, a bit of common sense. You've got an 11-game season, but you know that there's three marquee games. You're stretched for resources, so put those effort into those three games, get a lot of people there, then that overflow comes to other games and you get another shot at it the next year. Those kind of tactics?
Yeah, but, you know, at the time, people were saying in the board or, you know, we need to focus on the games where people don't come because we want people to come to every game.
Yeah.
So we would market a game against one of the worst teams in the league more than, you know, one of the best teams. And once we read that book, we understood that, I mean, we're doing it wrong.
Yeah. And you want your fans to have the best experience, and the best experience is the best atmosphere. It's a bit chicken and egg, but it's like if you can get people to a near full arena, they'll have a better experience than turning up to a half full arena because they've got a discounted ticket, they won't value the ticket, all of those things. It just leaves a bad taste in their mouth. So you may as well market your best product the most.
Yeah. Exactly.
So speaking of sort of, you know, let's fast forward a little bit, you know, when you've started out and tried to build that up, you've had a very busy February with European Women's Championship qualifiers and the World Champ qualifiers, and some really big games. You want to take us through? You know, you were both excited and fearful about when we spoke in January. You're like, we've got these big games and all of these plans in place. Take us through what those plans were and how things turned out.
Well, the setting was, I was talking now about being at the club. 3 years ago, I started working for the Federation, the national teams, and I tried to apply what I learned, and I've learned a lot during these 3 years. Yep. It started in 2016, I'd say. We were playing the European Championship qualifiers. We got Bosnia and Russia. Russia ranked number 7 in the world. Bosnia with Teletovic and Jusuf Nurkic, NBA players.
Yep.
Sweden were ranked 54. Not really known to the public, our players in Sweden. And our best players couldn't make it. Jonas Jerebko in the NBA, Jeffrey Taylor in Real Madrid, and Marcus Ericsson, drafted by the Hawks, plays in Spain now. So we had no stars. We couldn't say we're going to win the games. I mean, we were hoping, but it wasn't really credible. And so we tried to find a story. I mean, how are we going to get people to these games? And we said, okay, we're going to market the experience. We're going to put the game in the most classic arena in central Stockholm and tell people that Bosnians are crazy about basketball. They would come with thousands. If you don't show up for the game, we went to our tribe, the basketball participants, and said, this is it. I mean, you're going to have thousands of Bosnians. It's going to be an away game in Stockholm if you don't show up.
Yep.
But if you do show up, I mean, we'll have this great basketball experience that you've never experienced in Sweden before, the things you go to the States to see or Southern Europe. We're going to have this in Stockholm.
Yep.
And we started really focusing on youth coaches, on team parents in Stockholm area, sending emails really directly to them, explaining, selling the story. And it ended up having 7,000 people coming to the game.
Yep.
And, of course, by then we knew more about data collection and so having a relationship and everything. So
just for context for people and, you know, 7,000 people turning up to a national game, the last home game before that one was 900 people. Is that, you know, correct? So, you know, for people thinking, wow, you know, what the, like, to get 7x return or 7x increase in people turning up is a phenomenal aspect. And so it set you a really good, I guess, foundation for saying, well, this, you know, putting this system a little bit around it, getting this data, understanding who's coming along, set you for a platform going forward. You did things like checking in with the fans who went to the game, what they thought of it. Everything was super positive.
Yeah, I think we had a 98% of the people going to the game would recommend friends going to a basketball national team game, even though we lost the game. We lost the game by 2. And that was really the goal, to have people have fun. I mean, we were playing great, so, I mean, we lost by 2, but...
But it's more about getting behind the team in the same way, you know, that football, that the fans, no matter what, are going to be behind the team. They're always going to cheer. You wanted to bring some of that atmosphere to the basketball games.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not really, we're not doing anything uniquely. I mean, I see this all over the world. It's just that with few resources and a good story and lots of hard work, you can go from 900 to 7,000. I think the trick is to what we're really working on now is being stable and kind of stabilize on 5, 6, 7,000.
Yeah.
One shot is, so now when we had Turkey in, this was in 2016. Now we're going to play Turkey in now in February, and the ladies team we're going to play in February too. Can we repeat this or not? And when we met in Paris, I was. We had done a lot of work, but I didn't know.
Yep.
Was this just going to be a one-hit wonder, or can we repeat this and make it? Did all the things we learned pay? Mm. So we met. I think we met in the end of December.
Yep.
Now, we're in February. We had two games. We had the ladies' team who played the week before. For a record attendance of 5,000, and the men's team played Turkey, and we had a record attendance of 8,045 people showing up.
So first of all, again, congratulations on just, you know, back-to-back attendance records, getting people there, and it, you know, and when I do have one, people like yourself listening or anyone listening, and they do listen to the big clubs, the, you know, the Golden State Warriors and the Arsenals and that of the world, that they go, oh, but that's not me. Oh, I don't have that. And I've spoken to people at grassroots who are running their own clubs, whether they just be a grassroots clubs or clubs with, you know, smaller resources, smaller teams. You know, I hope that they're listening to this going, well, yeah, we can do that. We can drive attendance and we can start building out our database and start getting a better understanding. So I want to say thank you for being able to share that. But I guess everyone who is listening is now probably wondering. We've talked about the off field or off court and the success you had. What about the actual games themselves? Did they match all of the hype and all of the excitement that you had for the games?
Yeah, I mean, I think all the people that work in this business. I mean, you do so much around the field, then you just cross, you know, fingers and hope that the games themselves will be great.
Yeah.
But you can't really do anything about that. And so many times they're not really, you know, that spectacular, or you lose or whatever. This time the ladies played Croatia, and it was a tight game, and we won it by 7 in the end. Mm-hmm. We had 5,000, you know, mostly kids, but fans that were, you know, ecstatic. We had a fan zone with 800 people afterwards. They were signing autographs for hours.
Yep.
The men's team, I mean, they went into big time favorite Turkey. I mean, basketball is, I guess, the biggest sport in Turkey after football.
Where the Australian team has had a few battles with Turkey over the journey in basketball. They're a well-credentialed basketball nation.
Yeah, and they had, I'd say, what we need to know also is there was lots of Turkish fans in the arena, not only Swedish fans. I'd say 50-50.
Yep.
It was a great atmosphere. You had Turkish flags on the one side of the arena, Swedish flags on the other. Very good and positive atmosphere, but tense. And the game was so tight. Sweden was ahead most of the game. We were up by 13 with, I think, 3 minutes to go.
Yep.
And then everything just, you know, went to, yeah, shit, really.
Was it like a movie? Did the world start slowing? And you know, as the lead was being whittled down, you're like, oh, it was all working.
I think most people has been. I mean, we're not a winning basketball nation, really. So we've lost a lot more than we won. And I think every losing team, you know, when you're up and then the other team comes back, the favorite comes back, you're really, you know, oh, here we go again.
Yeah.
It's really that feeling.
Because you were playing the underdog.
Yeah. And now people are going to say, oh, it's always, I mean, you always lose.
Yeah.
So 2 seconds left of the game, Bobby Dixon, EuroLeague star, drives the basket. He gets blocked and the ball bounces out. Marcus Ericsson throws the ball he's on the floor outside the court and he throws it on him and out.
Yep.
So we thought it was our ball. Refs couldn't really see. So for 5 minutes, 2 seconds left of the game, we're up by one. They're checking the instant replay.
Oh, so you had the replay kick in, and I'm assuming the crowd is at fever pitch at this point, waiting to see what the referees are saying.
Yeah, because the Turkish fans, I mean, they were crazy. They came back 13 points in 3 minutes, so they were crazy.
Yeah,
Swedish fans were crazy because we were up by one against Turkey, 2 seconds left, and we don't know whose ball it is.
Yeah,
and it takes 5 minutes for them to decide it's Turkey ball. They do the inbound and they miss, and Sweden win in front of the record crowd. And I mean, of course, I guess it's the most amazing moment in my sports career, really.
So that's terrific. That will be stay tuned for the end of the podcast. We will have a sounds of the game from some of the, like, I saw a lot of the pictures and a lot of the videos coming through of the fans going crazy after that result. So, like I said, congratulations, really happy for you and your team of two and the rest of the staff there at the Federation. But, yeah, it's a really great story of both what you've done and, you know, let's see how the fairy tale continues going forward with the qualifiers.
Thank you, Sean. Thank you.
So to wrap up, I want to do the Sports Geek closing five. Do you remember the first sports event you ever attended?
I do. It was a basketball game.
Yep.
I went with my friend and his dad. I got home that night and watched the news, and the game was on TV. I thought that was really cool. I think I was 7 or 8 years old.
Okay, cool, cool. And you would have been to a few sports events in your time. Do you have a favorite go-to food or a favorite or a food memory that you would like to go back and revisit?
I think the best was I was in Kansas City for a baseball game, and it's just because it was like 25 degrees Fahrenheit. I mean, it was freezing.
Yep.
And I got these nachos that were so good because they were hot.
Yes. Yes. Nachos have been a popular choice. Is there a Swedish sports food that's native to Sweden?
No, I mean, hot dog is, yeah, I mean,
everyone does. It's just hot dog's a global thing now. Yeah. What's the first app you open in the morning?
Twitter? Yeah.
You've already given a recommendation with John Spolstra's book, but it is hard to find. Is there anyone else that you think the podcast listeners should follow that you follow, and why?
I think one podcast that is Troy Kirby's podcast about ticketing.
Yep.
I think that's great. He's producing so many episodes. I can't, you know, follow all of it, but I think it's great.
He is Troy is the Tower of Sports. He's prolific. But yes, he is very good and very much because he does have that ticketing side to him. It's a very much a bent. So it normally comes through in a lot of his interviews.
And also a book, The Elusive Fan, by Philip Kotler and Ryan, I think. I think they talk. It's been really important to us. That's where they talk about the idea of star power, and that's where we got the idea. They're telling that star power doesn't have to be players; it can also be a venue.
Okay.
And you need star power in order to attract people. And that's how we got the idea that our star power for these games would be this classic arena in the center of Stockholm.
Yep.
Where people say, are you really going to play there? You can't fill that up. I mean,
yep. So you took the challenge and you made the star, the venue, and then built the story around that.
Yeah. And hopefully we can now build the team, you know, from this. But the first time it was really the venue that was the star. And hopefully the players now will be stars.
But the good thing about that is it sort of starts building a culture of, you know, what it is to play, what it's like to play in front of a big crowd, and it starts bleeding into the team ethos, and, you know, the coaches can pick it up. You know, it's very much like how the Golden State Warriors picked up, you know, Coach Kerr's strength in numbers sort of mantra that he was using with the players and flipped it to a marketing campaign that the fans embraced that then fed it back to the players. So I think there is, you know, it can be a bit of cyclical nature and sort of building out. Doesn't mean you're going to be win. You know, it's not a winning strategy, but it's a really good culture piece to say, yeah, we, you know, as a fan base, we've got your back. As long as you're fighting for us, we'll be there. And so the both the team and the fans can feed off one another.
I think that's true. I mean, the strength in numbers is I love it when it's really thorough, when it applies on, you know, the whole organization from coming from the team, fans pick it up, do it their own thing, and then back to, like you're saying, I mean, I think it's so strong and credible. And so we'll have to check to see if we have something like that. That would be great. A mantra or tagline or something that the teams use and supporters.
And sometimes it is just a matter of sort of listening, like listening to what people are saying, the fans are saying, the coach, like, and they sort of, to me, the best ones come out organically and not out of a, marketing focus group. So last one, what social media platform is your MVP, whether it be, you know, answering it personally, or, as, you know, as your marketer, as the federation, what platform has done has been the MVP for you guys?
As a federation, Facebook, without doubt. I mean, we've been using it to market the games and geographically to our tribe, really, to find them in different little cities in Sweden, and also to follow the conversation about the team. Most of the fans are on Facebook.
Yep.
Without doubt, Facebook. Personally, I think Twitter has been the best, just because you can learn so much. You get outside of your box with Twitter and pick up things from all over the world.
How are you feeling of those two? How are you feeling? Because they're both sort of going through a little bit of a pivot at the minute. Facebook sort of pivoting back towards personal and potentially, you know, pushing brands a little bit to the side and making advertising more required, which I'm okay with myself. And Twitter sort of, you know, pivoting slowly and becoming a little bit more useful. There's even reports this morning I was reading that a lot of brands are seeing more video views on Twitter. They've seen a bump in the last couple of months. Do you feel like it's a few things that it's made changes with, its pivot to media a little bit, some tweaks that it's made? How are you feeling about both of those and, I guess, where they're headed?
I think it's interesting. I think Facebook, I mean, we were really into live and try to do a lot of live, but it's not really video. I think for Facebook, it's not always going to be there, but it's going to be there for a long time instrumental.
I think that the live video piece, again, it's another thing that sort of only came out in the last week or two, was that their Facebook is tending towards longer videos. It's sort of pushing as Facebook Watch as a platform as opposed to live, like even the fact that they're no longer paying a whole bunch of partners that they were paying to do live content. And so obviously those partners are no longer doing live content. That's potentially the spot that Twitter might be, because Twitter is live. Like, that's where Twitter thrives. Yeah. And so it makes more sense that the live video feeds and those kind of things and the pregame shows might end up there, and it might actually grow the audience, get a different audience there, change the product a little bit. So interesting times as they both develop. Last but not least, how can people connect with you and tell you that they're listening and potentially maybe like myself come along to a game at some point?
I think the easiest one is Twitter, if you can spell my name right.
we put the links in the show notes. Johannes Wohlert, and Wohlert is your last name. But yeah, the links will be there. They'll be tweeted by myself. You're also on LinkedIn. You can be connected. So thank you very much for one, catching up in Paris and making the time, and catching up again to chat about the success. And congrats again on the games in the last month.
Thank you again, and really thank you for having me, Sean. Like I said, I've been listening for years, and it's really fun and an honor to be on the show. And I'll keep listening, and I hope I'll see you soon again.
No worries. You had the opener and everything. You could have gone long time listener, first time guest.
That's true. Yeah, I had the long time listener. I just didn't think of first time. What participant? No, I didn't get this. So I was like, no, man.
That's all right. Well, thank you very much, Johannes, and we'll talk soon.
Okay. Thank you.
You're listening to Sports Geek Podcast. Send us a tweet to @SportsGeek.
Thanks again to Johannes. I will share all of the links and how to connect with him after my next interview. But just wanted to, I guess, remind listeners that do listen regularly that think, hey, Sean's a podcaster and the podcast that consumes everything that I do. And really, the podcast is about 3-4 hours a week of me interviewing, prepping guests, doing the intros and outros like right now, and interviewing guests and prepping. But what do I do for the rest of the time? It is working with teams, and it is working with sports brands, and it is working with leagues. And it is working with brands that want to activate and reach sports fans and in a variety of different ways, whether it's auditing what you're trying to do from a content point of view, whether you're planning for an event coming up, hey, this is what we want to do, this is what we want to do on the platforms. So reviewing what you're doing on the different platforms, are you maximizing your efforts on social media? One of the things we're doing a lot of at the minute is rate card review and development, helping them better understand the commercialization of your digital assets. So diving in, what content are you producing? What value are you putting on it? And what can you sell it to market? And then that sort of starts then leading into the campaign development and in the Sports Geek Campaigns product, where we work with your commercial team to help them build campaigns that drive revenue and help them build campaigns and pitch decks and offers to sponsors that have digital integrated. So one, to show that there's revenue coming back to your team via digital, but then also the real important thing is discussed with, you know, Fiona Green in a recent episode, you know, getting really valuable data for both you from a team point of view, but also for your sponsors. So we do a lot of stuff around data acquisition, whether it's be driving new leads for ticketing and season tickets or sponsor campaigns. Ticketing campaigns are always going to be something we do, and it's a focus, as Johanna said. You know, we're all about to getting the cheeks in the seats, so we help either advising in the setup and strategy for those ticketing campaigns or running them. Or the other thing that I've been doing recently is also helping people understand their podcasting strategy, how they're going to build and promote your podcast. And I sort of pull the curtain back a little bit on the methods that we use here at Sports Geek to promote ours. I've recently submitted to do a keynote at Podcast Movement in Philadelphia in July to sort of take people through that process, because the interview is a tiny part of the podcasting process, and the marketing of and the content that comes from it and how to get more listeners, I think, is a really valuable piece. And I do think that there's a real opportunity in the sports world to service fans and get great content, great podcasts in the hands of or in the ears of sports fans. So there's just a few of the services and sort of projects that we're working on and have worked on. So if you feel like we could help you in that space, please send me an email, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or book in a time for a phone call. Happy to chat with a Sports Geek podcast listener and see how we can help, or at least give you some advice where to go to. So you can book in a time for a call at sportsgeekhq.com/phone call. My second guest on this episode is Brian Watkins. He is from Rep the Squad, based out of Seattle. Really innovative way and a bit of a game changer in the e-commerce and sports merchandise space. So I hope you enjoy my conversation with Brian as we sort of dive in. What is Rep the Squad, how it got started, and why it could be a real big game changer in the merchandise space. very happy to catch up with Brian Watkins, co-founder of Rep the Squad. Welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Sean. Thanks very much.
So tell us a little bit about Rep the Squad. It was launched in August 2017. And, you know, if you look at the highlights, it's, you know, the short one is Netflix for jerseys. But, yeah, tell us what Rep the Squad is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Rep the Squad is a jersey subscription service. So it is like kind of Netflix or Gamefly or Rent the Runway, whichever model you want to apply. But essentially for $19.95 a month, fans can come in and subscribe to our services. It gives them access to our entire inventory of professional sports jerseys. So we represent roughly 12 teams right now, but within every single team within NFL, MLB, or NBA, we offer a selection of players, styles, sizes. You just queue them up in your locker. We ship you the first one that's on your list. When you're finished wearing it, if it's in a day, a week, a month, we don't care. You send it back to us. We'll commercially clean it, and we send you the next one and just really give you the foundation to represent your team any way you want.
So what was the genesis of, I guess, the idea? Because we are moving into this on-demand, you know, sharing economy, gig economy, that kind of thing. So the template of the business was sort of there, but, you know, what was sort of the genesis of it?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's both. On the business side, I looked at the economic model as being just really like the next evolution of consumption within our kind of in the retail market. So I've had a background in e-commerce for almost 20 years, you know, going from phase one of just listing everything online and driving down price to integrating omni-channel solutions, integrating into stores, and really saw this upcoming trend. And it's already here in a lot of places about access versus ownership. And the ability to actually starting to cross over into apparel and then finally into male apparel made sports a very attractive proposition. So, you know, I fell in love with the model. And then really my co-founder, you know, he's the sports nut. So he's the guy, when you look into the closet, there's a lot of great memories in there and there's a lot of jerseys in there that, you know, he can never wear again. And I think it was a combination of my passion around sports and the value and the model and his passion around sports that really combined together to create Rep the Squad.
Yeah, I mean, it is a changing landscape. I think it was only, you know, just in the jersey market, there was even in the lead up to the NBA trade deadline, there was a few retailers offering trade guarantees. If you you buy a Blake Griffin Clippers jersey and then he gets traded to the Pistons, you're right, you're not gonna wear it. So that's where your model fits, quite well.
Yeah, and I think, you know, as people realize, you know, jerseys in the United States cost between $100 and $350 for a replica or authentic version. And, you know, that's a pretty significant investment. And so, yeah, I mean, Fanatics and a few others have come out with kind of a guaranteed 3-month option that you can return your jersey. But we look at it very differently. We want to create a platform that allows people to extend for however long they want. So, we actually also have a trade-in program we just launched as well. But our idea here is like, hey, just, you know, send us back anything that you can just no longer want to wear. Is it someone who's retired? If it's someone who left the game after 6 years, if it's a childhood jersey, you know, you're just looking for some value out of, you know, we want to give people that platform to exchange. So the value proposition of them being kind of a passionate fan is still there.
So, yeah. So what is your customer profile? Because you sort of said there that you've got that price point of $100 to $300 per jersey. And someone wants to wear, you know, 5 or 6 different jerseys. We've seen the new Nike partnership with the NBA. They come out with 4 different versions of every jersey for every team. And if you're a Kevin Durant fan, you want 4 different jerseys, and you're getting close to potentially, you know, $500 or $600 if you want to get all of them. Who is your target market in that space that says I want to wear multiple jerseys, whether they be to the game or just out and about? Have you found a sweet spot in the short time so far?
Yeah, we spent actually a lot of time before launching researching the different segments, and there's 3 core groups that came out. And the first one was actually the one that surprised me. It was actually the diehard sports fan. It's actually people who already own multiple jerseys have the highest likelihood of joining Rep the Squad. And when you talk to them, it's not because they want to replace their jersey purchasing. You know, you use your example, people are going to buy the home Kevin Durant jersey.
Yep.
But what they're not going to be able to do is buy the Sydney, the alternate, their way. Maybe they want even the Seattle Supersonic throwback Durant jersey. And that's where the sort of accessibility of an endless closet comes into play. And so diehard sports fans were by far our number one acquisition target within the segments. And you see it within their profile. So, you know, one of the interesting things on that segment was when Cliff Averill from the Seattle Seahawks got injured last year, we saw a lot of retailers start to discount their jerseys because they were trying to liquidate inventory because they had a concern about him. Versus on our side, we actually saw fan engagement and rentals spike because that, you know, kind of passionate diehard fans want to wear that jersey to represent that person who's being injured and kind of say, hey, we got your back on this. So it's kind of, you know, diehard sports fans was number one. Youth also tested extremely well. Kids, you know, if for everyone who's bought jerseys, and I'm kind of that test case here with my son, you know, his favorite player seems to change every single month and he seems to grow an inch.
Yep.
So instead of having to buy multiple jerseys, you know, for one single price, we can kind of satisfy his needs for the entire 12-month period. And then finally, it's counterfeit jerseys. And so, you know, one of the things that we learned during our research is roughly 25% of people who walk into a stadium are wearing a counterfeit jersey. And we took the time to actually pull them aside and ask a very uncomfortable question. We asked, hey, do you know you're wearing a counterfeit jersey? And, you know, lucky enough, almost every single one of them said, yes, I know. And so then we asked, well, what brought about that decision? And you heard two constant themes. You heard one about accessibility. So it wasn't, you know, so affordability was in there. That was the one of the themes. But the other one was accessibility, where they couldn't get a certain player in the pro shop. They were either sold out, or maybe they didn't have the right production run, or maybe they wanted the salute to service style, or the color rush style, and it wasn't available. And when they look at the value proposition that we were going to be able to have across all these different players and styles, there was a greater than a 50% likelihood of them wanting to try out this service.
And so, you know, we've heard the stories around big data and the analysis that Netflix does around the content that the consumers are consuming to help them decide what they're starting to program and some of what they're doing in their original programming. Are you sort of running the same and similar stats to manage your inventory to know this player's a hot player? We need more of this inventory because you don't want to have that experience if someone says, oh, James Harden's going to win the MVP. I need James Harden. Or the NFL season's kicking in. I really need to, you know, a lot of these type of jerseys. How are you managing that from an experience point of view? Because you don't want people not being able to get the jersey they want.
Exactly right. And this comes down to, you know, maybe this works in fantasy football, but there's not really a true quote unquote marketplace for player jerseys. And so something we've done internally is built what we believe is a real-time marketplace. We bring in about 30 to 35 variables, depending on the player's contract, the position, you know, last injury, what their fan engagement is within Facebook and Twitter and Instagram. We're looking at their fantasy sports scores. We tie all that in, and we basically rate the players as being between 1 and 5 stars. And so with a 5-star player like a Harden, we're going to buy into that inventory. You know, we see what people are queuing up in their locker, and we're willing to go out multiple deviations of risk with a 5-star player versus maybe someone who's on the last year of their contract. Maybe they've been injured. We look at a player like that and we start to pull back to reduce our risk of future investment of jerseys until we know they're ready to come back or until they sign something new.
And so from an inventory and I guess league coverage point of view, what do you currently have in store in availability from a rep the squad point of view? Are you just in the US, you know, North American market for now? And are the plans to go, potentially further?
Yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I think right now for your international subscribers is we're not ready. Right now we're representing within the NFL, we have the Seattle Seahawks, the Oakland Raiders, the San Francisco 49ers, the Denver Broncos, and the Detroit Lions. And then we followed up basically with the NBA offering in each of those cities. So we have, the Denver the Nuggets are in there. Yeah. The Golden State Warriors are in there. We actually have the Supersonics, which kind of makes it fun for Seattle.
Yep.
We have the Pistons. And then we also launched the LA Lakers. And then for Major League Baseball, we have the Detroit Tigers and the Mariners right now. And we're here expanding to some additional markets. But what we're really doing is this is a seed round for us. This was us to test the concept to really prove, you know, we had a lot of theories. We had the segments. We had what we thought was right. This was really to come out and prove that the model works. And we've been extremely pleased. So now what we're looking at is how do we expand across the U.S. And then we actually think there's actually a great global opportunity. I mean, all you have to do is think about European Premier League and the Indian Cricket League and where rugby goes. And we actually think there's a lot of plays about how the kits change over time, especially within the world of, you know, world football, and how you could actually use those kits to be current in some markets, and you can move last year's kits back into other markets for rentals and be very successful as well.
And what's been the, I guess, the initial feedback from customers and even non-customers? Are you getting people pushing back on the, hang on, I'm not wearing, it's not my jersey, I'm wearing a jersey that someone else has worn, those kind of, what are the kind of questions you're getting from, you know, I guess, the market?
Yeah, you know, we've been really pleased. We have, you know, we survey our customers, both current and past customers, and we see, you know, our net promoter scores are kind of in the upper end of satisfaction. And so we're really pleased with the feedback we've gotten. And we also offer a lot of things to our customers as they're pausing or wanting to cancel their subscription. We ask them if they just want to go into off-season mode to launch into the following league season. And we get a tremendous amount of follow-up demand and reactivation. So we know that we're pleasing the customer. And I had the same concern. You know, some people say, you know, what about wearing someone else's jersey and how does that feel? And, you know, it was actually on a radio program, had the best response, which is, you know, if you've ever been to a hotel room, if you think those sheets are brand new, you know, you've been taken for something, right?
Yep.
So this idea of, you know, and this is where the confirmation, I think, of this model worked was when Rent the Runway and the Tote were doing it for female fashion,
that
was bridging the gap into kind of the male consumer and the youth consumer. And now we see it everywhere. It's not just with us or with renting a tux for a wedding. You know, even Nike today has a subscription program for kids' shoes where you can wear, you know, you can subscribe and you get a new pair of shoes every month and you ship back the old ones. So I think we're breaking down this barrier because it's a new trend around accessibility.
And it's just, I guess it's an education process. Once a few break down those barriers, it just becomes a thing. I mean, you know, 15 years ago, we didn't think we'd be sleeping on strangers' couches or driving other people's cars. So it's just something that changes.
Exactly right. And I think it is a trend that's going to be lasting for a long time, just across all those things, just, you know, not just with accessibility, but to your point, the experiences as well has become in a very similar platform.
So from a, you know, you talked a little bit about, I guess, the city by city, market by market strategy, not to spread yourself too thin across the US. What are you finding that's working from an acquisition point of view? Is it a mix of, you know, PR, but then getting into more traditional digital and e-commerce strategies that are working to acquire new customers?
Yeah, I mean, we're still in that, you know, let's test a bunch of things phase. Yep. But, you know, early readout, you know, one, PR has been fantastic. Obviously, even working with people like yourself and getting into the podcast, it's a very targeted market when you think about diehard sports fans.
Yep.
And so I think there's a way to communicate with them. They're also pretty easy to find on social channels. But then as we broaden out, like youth has been a little bit harder.
Yep.
To acquire, but I think that's because it's a two-putt sort of thing, right? You got to talk to the parent or the youth, but it's a two-person acquisition discussion.
Yeah.
And so figuring that out over time. But, you know, what we continue to find is regular e-commerce channels that support passionate fans work best. So it is going to be what you see on Facebook and Instagram and Twitter. It's what you're seeing even with radio, sports talk radio, very targeted podcasts. Things that haven't worked are actually the more traditional channels. So, you know, Google AdWords for us doesn't apply. And
yep.
I think there's two reasons why. I think one is that people aren't trained yet to think about renting a jersey. This is definitely more of an awareness campaign. And then the second thing, quite frankly, is when you type in New Jersey or Jersey rental, all the search results are for New Jersey, the state. It has nothing to do with sports and apparel. So there's just some logic in there that has to be sorted out over time to make that be more effective.
Yeah, but you also, yeah, you know, the Google AdWords space, the intent piece of, oh, I want to buy a Durant jersey. That's what they're looking for. They're looking to buy. No, they're not in the mode of, oh, what are other options for it? So you are sort of making a market in that space. So you do have to push out the message, similar to, you know, Dollar Shave Club had to do, putting out a really hot video, and then everyone understood, oh, I've got a subscription service that sends me blades every month. You're in that same sort of space to get that awareness piece and then get word of mouth as people turn up to a game 3 weeks in a row with a new jersey and the friend says, oh, how do you keep affording all these jerseys? That's where that conversation comes in.
Yeah, that conversation really around, you know, referral and word of mouth is going to be key for us. And we've seen it already. And it's exactly that scenario. When someone shows up with the third time with the three different jerseys, people are like, wow, you're passionate. And, you know, their kind of response back is, no, I'm just smart. And that really brings, I think, new, very highly qualified traffic to visit us and learn more about our offering.
As more retail, you know, you've got a strong experience in e-commerce and retail. As more retail is, you know, moving away from bricks and mortar and into e-commerce, there has been a bit of a bounce back into pop-up shops and things like that around awareness. Do you think there will be potentially something in time where you might do like a stadium pop-up where someone turns up to the stadium and they rent the jersey almost like for the game only, or at least sign up and, hey, now you've got a jersey for the game and you've signed up? Do you see that something like that may work for Rep the Squad?
Yeah, I absolutely believe it will. We're actually experimenting and testing right now with several different options. There's kind of that, you know, game day rental where we could be outside, you know, where, you know, there's going to be 50, 60, 70,000 fans and be like, hey, you know, you can rent the jersey for the game, but if you don't return it an hour after the game, we're just going to assume you're keeping it for the month, right? So you could give them that optionality in a highly concentrated way. The other thing we are looking at is how do you make a physical presence at a national level? And I think there's kind of a couple of different ways we've thought about that. One might be actually partnering with either the retailer or with the team shop, saying, we're going to drive highly qualified traffic into your shop to do the exchange. Or we could actually do something almost like, you know, like almost like an Amazon locker.
Yep.
Where we could actually have a single point of delivery where you could drop off your old jersey and pick up your new one at the same time. But the idea, I think, you know, everything's been built on previous rounds of e-commerce evolution. I think an online offline strategy for this, along with everything else, will just make sense over time.
And is that again sort of in that we're talking in future wear now and on your roadmap, but that potentially does open up those conversations with the teams, because you're not talking to them about clipping the ticket on one jersey once. You're talking about lifetime value of a fan and you know, getting them on a subscription and getting that data and information. And that's one of the things that the sports teams are really, really interested in. So it does give them another model with Rep the Squad.
Yeah, I think that whole trend of how teams are consolidating loyalty into single apps and single uses, this plays right into it, right? Because this is a unique offering that gives them more data about, you know, the fans, you know, favorite players, where they're at, who they're accessing, and gives them the opportunity to also sell. So if you're wearing that Kevin Durant jersey as a rental, you could actually re-communicate to that fan saying, hey, we know you're already renting that one. Why don't you come on down to the team shop and buy it? And we can also do your rental exchange right there. So I think there's this opportunity to work within those teams to really bring about that data. I also think there's a whole nother level, which the teams are working with right now too, around things like suite services or even, you know, ticket services. You know, what's the value of having a season ticket versus buying your one-off tickets on StubHub? And, you know, one of the things could be is, you know, a Rep the Squad membership or even a white-labeled, you know, team-sponsored subscription service might be a benefit to fans to keep them more engaged within the activities of the team during the season.
Definitely, yeah. It definitely opens up a lot of opportunities. I'm really interested to see how it goes. RepTheSquad.com is where people can find it. How can people, if they want to, connect with you, Brian? What's the best way?
That's a great question. I think the best way is just going to the website and reaching out, you know, via our customer service. You're guaranteed to get a fast response. And we're also can be found, you know, Rep the Squad can be found on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, all the typical channels as well.
Okay. Well, thank you very much. As someone who loves a jersey, I'm sitting here in the Sports Geek office surrounded by Sports Geek jerseys. I don't think you'll be, I don't think any of those will be on Rep the Squad anytime soon, but I do like the idea, and it'll be interesting to see how it goes as it grows over the next 12 to 18 months.
Thank you so much. It's been great talking to you, Sean.
Download our Facebook campaigns guide at sportsgeekhq.com/FB campaigns.
Thanks again to Johannes and Brian. You can send them a tweet, Johannes Walhurt, J-O-H-A-N-N-E-S-W-O-H-L-E-R-T, and Brian Watkins, Brian with an I, 13 are their Twitter handles. Those will be in the show notes. The show notes, as always, you can get them by just putting the episode number. So in this case, it would be sportsgeekhq.com/185. Thank you there for DJ Joel mentioning the Facebook campaigns guide, building Facebook campaigns. It pretty much goes through. There's no pretty much about it. It does. It goes through. It's our follow-up to the Facebook data guide, and it shows and takes you through how we at Sportsgeek build out campaigns, both from a naming convention, what we look at from a collateral point of view. So if you're looking to build Facebook campaigns, or you have someone on your team that's looking to build Facebook campaigns, I highly suggest go back and get our Facebook data guide, which you can get at sportsgeekhq/FBdata. And then the campaigns guide pretty much is the sequel to that. How do you go about executing the campaigns? What type of campaign objectives are best for ticketing? What are best for engagement and reach? And what are best for sponsors? We go through all that in that. And you can get those, both of those. You can get the campaigns one at sportsgeekhq.com/FBcampaigns and download it now. Thank you to those who have downloaded it so far and given feedback. Really appreciate it. And last thing, because we're sort of in the season for it, is we've been doing a little bit of social media athlete training as a workshop, working through with athletes on how to use it, what platforms work, how to get it into their athlete lifestyle and the workflow, I guess. And then also one of the big things is sort of understanding privacy and also understanding security of all the platforms, because one of the worst things to happen to an athlete is for them to get hacked, and not only their social media accounts getting hacked, but you know, other parts of their lives. So if you have a sports team and athletes that need a reminder on what to do and what not to do, I'm happy to talk about the things that they shouldn't do, but also it also works really well for coaching staff that want to understand what their players are doing. So if you have a coaching staff that's not using social media, doesn't quite understand digital, we can take them through how to use it, what to do, how to monitor their athletes. At least they could be lurking there and seeing what they're doing. So you can, again, go to sportsgeekhq.com/social media athlete training. Has all the info. It can send you some info of the training itself. But as always, please, you can send me a tweet at Sean Callanan. You can email me, sean@sportsgeekhq.com, or you can reach me in the Sports Beers Slack community. Until next episode, as I said in my conversation with Johannes, the sounds of the game, stay tuned, is some of the fans completely going off after their big win against Turkey. Congratulations to Johannes and the team and the Swedish team. Look forward to more success both on and off the court. Until next episode, my name is Sean Callanan, and you've been listening to Sports Geek.
Join over 1,000 sports business executives in Sports Biz Slack. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/slack. Connect with Sean on LinkedIn. Thanks if you have already. Go to sportsgeekhq.com for more sports digital marketing resources. Want to chat with Sean? Book a time for a call. Go to sportsgeekhq.com/phone call.
The rim is going to get the rebound, and it's Turkey. Balbe back out to Mamutoglu. Does well to avoid the cover. Nails the three. Turkey's within a point. We're inside the final minute. Can this game get any better? They do it. Stanley's got to put it up. Does it land off the rim? And Sweden have done it. Sweden have beaten Turkey in Stockholm. And look at those men in God go nuts. And the men and women in the fans, in the stands too. It's a shock to end all shocks. Sweden have beaten Turkey.